Welcome to the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society. Welcome to ITSP Magazine. Thank you for joining us for this conversation.
Marco.
Where do we go?
Where do we go?
Where do we go?
This is chapter four. Chapter four. I think we're going to the center of the brain.
Inside the mind of a hacker.
We started right globally, regionally, down into where people live, and started to get inside the mind of a hacker. And today we're full on in there.
Yep, absolutely. We touched on the geographic, we touched on the demographic. And now we're going to go into the psychographic or anything that is around the psychology of what makes this amazing community as exciting and as diverse as it is, because that's eventually something we're going to have to talk about today as we go in analyzing what it means to have a hacker mindset. Exactly. Couldn't propose better guest than the one that we have today to talk about this, Sean.
I know. Good friends of ours. First up, Casey. It's always great to see you. Casey Ellis is the founder and chairman, CTO of BugCrowd. And with us also, we have researcher, data scientist, teacher, student, and hacker, Katie Paxton Fear.
All good around
to see you both.
Hi, everyone. I am very tired before you ask. And yes, I know I look tired. It's several jobs rolled into one.
Well, there's a lot going on there. And a very international crowd today. We have Australia and Manchester, UK.
Yeah, we've got a nice spread of accents going on this call.
Exactly.
I have to tune my brain when I listen to people's accents, so I can only imagine the difficulty that someone might be having, like tuning both to the British, American, Australian accents at the same time.
Exactly. And my faux Irish accent coming through, I'm sure, a little bit. So let's very briefly to kind of get inside your own minds, a view from each of you of your journey to this point in time and why being a hacker is something important to you. And Katie, I'm going to start off with you for that.
Yeah, so my journey has been not related to hacking at all. I knew I was interested in computers from a really young age, had zero interest in hacking. I can't tell you how little I cared about hacking. I remember as a teenager, all of my friends got into hacking. I remember going, that sounds way too hard. I don't want to do that. So I did a degree in computer science, worked as a, got into machine learning and data science. Then I realized I hated my job, quit my job and became a PhD student. And the only PhD, because I hadn't actually applied when PhDs actually start, because I'd quit my job because I realized I hated my job. Just applied for one I was interested in, and it happened to include an element of cybersecurity. So I thought, okay, that's fine. Did like halfway through my PhD, have a few friends that are interested in bug bounties who I knew from university. And they were like, oh, Katie, come hack with us. And I was like, no, thank you. That sounds really difficult. I don't want to hack a real company. I've got no idea what I'm doing. So then I went along with them because I'm very vulnerable to peer pressure. And when I was there, I found my first vulnerability. I'd never done any kind of hacking before. I would not have labeled myself a hacker. And I was like, okay, that's a fluke. Same day, I found my second vulnerability. Then I found two more like a month later. And at that point, I was like, okay, there's quite obviously a trend here. And, you know, I've been now a hacker for over a year. I make content teaching other people how to get into hacking on my YouTube channel. And I really feel like I came from a position where I really wasn't a hacker to where now I feel like I can firmly describe myself as a hacker. and have that kind of mindset of picking something up, breaking it, and then pretending we do not see the resulting mess. So that's kind of my journey into hacking and how I kind of got where I am. It's really been a very short journey. It's been kind of a roller coaster year and a half, to be honest.
Yeah, but you know, this really show how I don't think you get a badge or, you know, you run, you do a test and then you're like, hey, I got the hacker license. You know, I feel like it's a mindset. And Casey, we've talked about this many times in our conversation in the past. And I don't want to say you're either born with it or you're not, but there are ways to develop that. But that curiosity, that, you know, mindset, as Katie said, to break stuff and make it better, I think it's the core of it.
Yeah, totally. I think it can be learned. But I think oftentimes, like more often, it's, you know, kind of tripped over or discovered. You know, people just kind of realize, oh, wow, I love pulling things apart and putting them back together, or, you know, getting technology to do things that it was never designed to do in the first place. You know, in my case, it was a little bit of all of those things. But then this idea that, like, I really enjoy thinking like a criminal, but I've got no desire to be one. You know, there's that sense of mischief and kind of almost countercultural creativity that is just there. And I think growing up, like, looking for something to do with that, because it's like, literally, you know, I don't want to cause harm. I don't want to be a bad guy. I don't want to break rules. I don't want to do any of that sort of stuff. But this idea of, like, wanting to see behind the locked door, you know, not really being able to escape that either. So you know, finding cybersecurity, finding, you know, offensive security, and eventually realizing that there's an outlet for that, and that it's productive, that, you know, you can make money from it, that you can actually, you know, do, like, really good work and improve the security of the internet and people, you know, the safety of people that you care about in the process. That's kind of Christmas when you figure out that that's a thing. That was really my experience. I think as well on you know, the whole kind of label thing. I'm, you know, from a vintage in this space where hacker, it was kind of like a faux pas to attribute that title to yourself at the time. Was one of those things where, like, someone else had to brand you a hacker. You had to, you know, do something worthy of being described as a hacker. That's kind of the period of all of this that I grew up in. And, you know, in some ways that was kind of cool. In other ways, I'm glad to see the back of that, because there's an elitism that's attached to it that I actually think is, you know, pretty gatekeeping and counterproductive at this point in time, where someone can just say, yeah, this is the discipline of computer security, or even just of the way I think that I identify with. And it's something that I want to, you know, attach to a community around, something that I want to grow in. I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah. And thanks for that, Casey, because I think you'll probably be humble, but I mean, you've taken this mindset and harnessed it across the world. And helped create an environment and an industry and businesses that give a place for folks with this way of thinking, a way to do what they love to do, right? And yeah. And we're probably going to talk about, well, we will talk about the diversity aspect of this, and perhaps even giving folks a place to do something that they can't do elsewhere. And so what I'd like from you is kind of you talk about this, you had to be labeled by somebody else, a bit of elitism, to a place where we are now. Maybe the future holds even more changes, but the mindset, yeah, has that changed along with just the perception of what a hacker is?
Yeah, I think a couple of things have shifted. And you know, these are shifts that really starting Bug Crowd, you know, we didn't invent the idea of hackers being able to contribute meaningfully to society. That's been going on since long before we showed up. Nor did we invent the idea of, you know, companies either receiving information or soliciting the feedback of those people. What I identified and really why I decided to try to create the category, which has since, you know, turned out to be a pretty good idea, which is fortunate, and the result of a lot of hard work and all those sorts of things. But yeah, the reason behind that was really identifying the fact that like the bad guys have access to this talent and this type of wiring, this type of creativity as well. And they apply it without rules. You know, they basically take folks that can, you know, manipulate technology and do things to achieve malicious outcomes. And they do that, you know, ignoring the law, ignoring rules, ignoring, you know, the harm they cause and all those sorts of things. And as defenders, really, it's our job to be able to outsmart, you know, the brain power and the resourcing and the ability for those folk on the bad guy side to connect and create impact. Like our job is to basically apply more intelligence to the problem than they do and try to stay ahead of them. So really the origin behind Bug Crowd was out of my, you know, role and position and, you know, friendships even in the community, seeing that there was all this kind of latent talent sort of hanging around unplugged from this growing problem. Really for lack of invitation. That's kind of all it was. It was the fact that there was all these people that had the ability and the capacity and the intelligence to help out. But, you know, I think a combination of people, you know, being scared of hackers, quote unquote, people being sort of uncertain or unsure of like, you know, is this someone who I should be fearful of because of what they can do? Like, are they actually a criminal? Is the fact that they can do a bad thing to a computer something that I should just interpret as a threat, regardless of their intent? There's been a lot of strides, I think, made in just the baseline perception of that. When we started, you know, the first 3 years of Bug Crowd was really convincing the market that, you know, hackers aren't inherently evil. And there's still a lot of work to be done, I think, in that space, but it's gone from a default, nah, go away, to, oh, wow, okay, there's a potential, you know, set of answers, you know, hiding in this group of people that we can actually use to you know, make our users safer and make the internet a better place.
Yeah. And with that, I want to go back to Kathy and your experience in being someone that didn't feel like you were good enough to be a hacker. And meanwhile, of course, you go to get a PhD in artificial intelligence. So I'm sorry about that. I guess you got the skill there. But what was that you think that at the time was the skills that you locked into to consider yourself a hacker? And now that you are part of the community, what do you think these skills are that you can translate into a real world, at this point, business? Let's face it, it's a business.
Yeah, wow. I think at the time, talking a few years ago, I think it's that I was kind of aware of security. Like, I've been a developer for a really long time. Like, I was one of those kids who saw a website and went, how on earth does it know who I am? Like, how does it know? I used to play Neopets because that's my kind of generation. And I used to think, because you play Neopets, you play a game, and at the very end, you get points. And you can redeem the points for currency, essentially. And I did not know how it knew to put those points, that currency, into my account. And that's kind of where my background is. It's very much developer-focused. So when I kind of was looking into security issues, it was coming very much from that developer mindset, that kind of, oh yeah, I have to update that software because there's some security vulnerability. I didn't really care what security vulnerabilities were. I just knew I had to update the software. And I think what changed is I went from the person who was like, how does the computer know that I've got Neo points, to how do I gain even more Neo points? Unfortunately, Neopets isn't really much of a thing anymore. But I was very much had that kind of shift in my focus where I realized everything I knew about being a developer, everything I knew about how stuff is built can be used to totally break it down. Like, my brain works in such a way that I can look at like a piece of software and I know how it's built. I can see essentially the little gaps between the Lego pieces. Like, it looks like a plain color. But for me, I can see all the little gaps and I can see what shape bricks everything is. And that's really what changed, was that mindset between going from, oh, okay, this is how you build stuff, to, oh yeah, this is how you break stuff. And then from that, I really realized, like, when I was doing finding my first round abilities and looking at real software, that everybody was like me and not very good at writing software, because I found my first vulnerability in something that was a classic me mistake, right? I realized that what I was looking at was like something that I would have designed poorly. And then I broke it and it felt really good. And I've got to say, I've never done drugs before. I'm very much very straight. And I felt amazing. I felt like the smartest person on the planet. I was like shaking. I couldn't write the report. I was like this. I was like, oh my God, what did I find again? And that feeling was incredible. And I think what I can now bring, now I've seen this kind of other side that was like previously so hidden to me, despite it being in plain sight, is that now I look at my own code and I look at other people's code, and I'm not just coming in with that builder mindset, I'm also coming in with that breaker mindset. And that not only makes me a better software developer, but it makes me a better hacker as well, especially in understanding how technology is built in that way.
Yeah, and Casey, I'd love your thoughts on this, kind of the builder versus breaker. Do you have a sense of how many are both, one or the other, become one or the other or both?
A disproportionate number of my favorites come from, you know, the builder background, and then either kind of learn the breaker mindset or you know, stumble over the fact that they've already got it and learn how to
that
apply.
Was me.
Yeah, for exactly the reason Katie said. Like, she's like, oh, here's all of the stuff that I would have done, you know, in that position. It's this idea of, you know, being a builder and then applying a breaker thinking, a breaker mindset to your own, you know, building in the past. You can basically almost preempt the Andy patterns and the shortcuts and all the different things that you would have done as a developer that would have created an issue, and kind of, you know, you end up with this like X-ray vision through the code.
Yeah.
The way that I think about it is that, you know, there's almost like three tiers of creativity that often, you know, I see being applied to offensive security. There's people that approach it from like a QA standpoint. They know how to identify the symptoms of an issue and then how to exploit that kind of surface level thing. What those people tend to get very good at is, you know, being creative around where they find those symptoms. You know, there's another layer, which is kind of what we're talking about right now, which is people that have come in from an architectural or a building standpoint that think, you know, have applied breaker thinking on top of that, who can, you know, see symptoms, see attributes of an application or a target space, and basically almost reverse engineer the architectural thinking that's gone into it. So they sort of know where the dead bodies are because they've done it themselves in the past, right? And then, you know, you end up with folk that it's kind of an extension, I think, of that second, you know, tier, people that, you know, they're just really there to get to the gold, and all of this stuff in the middle almost becomes transparent to them. It's really just about, hey, you're here. There's a thing that you want that's over there. Go get it. And they can do that because they've got ways to really create a path between wherever they are and wherever they want to be. And it's kind of, you know, it's almost like a pyramid in that sense, in terms of the size of the population that they can do those different things. Like that top level where all of that stuff's transparent and people are just kind of walking through code, that's quite, I think, rare to find. So this sort of, you know, this group that we're talking about now that Katie's just sort of introduced, to me, that's the most fun because you really do get to, you know, identify some pretty interesting risk very quickly. But more than that, you know, the other side of this is that you actually get to speak in the language of the engineer when you're trying to articulate the problem, which is something that people that just hack tend not to be very good at. It's like, here's alert one, here's an XSS. Like, why do I care? I'm an engineer. I don't even understand what you're talking about right now. If you understand the process of design and development, you can think more clearly about impact. You can think more clearly about, you know, even the economic decisions that have gone into it being that way. And it helps with, you know, ultimately, you know, educating the business, not just on how to reduce the like discrete risk that you found, but actually how to, you know, learn not to do it again in the future. which is it's a huge piece that I think gets missed a lot when people talk about, you know, vulnerability discovery. It's not just about whack-a-mole and finding unique issues. It's about like dealing with them, but then also trying to bring in the knowledge into the organization on how not to do the same thing in the future as well.
Yeah, and Katie, I'd love your thoughts on this, because I'm going to take a second here, because I cut my teeth in tech and InfoSec as a QA engineer. And I spent quite a time ultimately reversing engineering the products we were building to make sure that the quality, quote unquote, quality was good, not necessarily from a security perspective. I soon wanted to be on the builder side, because I saw that if I only could get the team to define this stuff this way from the very beginning, we could eliminate a lot of these quality issues, quote unquote. So I'm wondering, as you're engaging with folks and providing content with them, are you seeing people interested in not just breaking, but also finding ways to address it from the business perspective, from the risk perspective, and taking that learning beyond just hacking?
So I have 20,000 subscribers, which to most people on the internet, not that many followers. Like, there's YouTube channels with millions. But if you think about those people in a room, that's a lot of people in a single room. I very often, whenever I look it up, I look up like spaces that could fit that many people. And we are running out of spaces in the UK. If I wanted to hold a KatieCon, we'd have to do it in a field. So because I have... get everyone in a field hacking would be amazing. But because I've got so many people, I see so many different people who want to get into this. I see so like people who are developers, right? People who come from that developer background and that want to break stuff. I've got people who are really like young people, like as in not even 18 yet, still minors, still children, who say they really want to get into cybersecurity and they really want to do that security mindset. I know one guy who is a farmer and he does bug hunting on the side, and it's just amazing. Like, this community is so diverse.
Use his field.
Yeah, that's a great idea. Ask if I could use his field. But yeah, you have such a broad range of people. Like, there is not just one person. And even if you look at like groups of people, even within there, you'll see different people. Like, there's some people who want to get into hacking because they're actually on the blue team and it's what they want to go into more in their career. They're more interested in that and they're looking for some real experience with it. You've got people who are on the blue team, so same kind of like large group on the defender side, who just want to get better at their jobs. You've got people who are just interested in it as a hobby. Like, hacking is, I think we get a bit confused that hacking is like one guy, like one person, male, black hoodie, dark room, blue text on the background, command line. And actually this community is so broad and I've only got like a small subset that I can actually see who interact with my content. There's probably hundreds more different groups out there who are really interested in how to hack. And nothing is stopping them, right? There is no barrier that you can't overcome if you want to get interested in hacking. I taught my mom. My mom is in her 50s. She hates computers. She loathes using a computer. I have to file her taxes because she doesn't want to touch the computer. She can do it fine. They just changed it from a paper form to an online form. And now she doesn't like it because it's on the computer. I taught her how to hack in like an hour, right? There is not this idea of what a hacker is. And like, we talk about like builders and breakers and people want to break things, but it's so surface level when compared to like any individual can learn this. This is not some magical wizardry, which is what I messed up on when I first did it. I was like, this is magic. I don't do that kind of magic. No, I make stuff appear on a screen. That's the kind of magic that I like. But actually, no, there's just, everyone has that ability to do, like carve out that little security niche, and it's so many different people.
Well, 100%, yeah. And like the diversity of background, I think, is part of what makes it so strong. You know, like your farmer example, like farmers have a very particular risk model that they have to live with. You know, they're betting on the weather. They're doing all sorts of different things in terms of how they operate. So they carry that training and that mindset into how they approach computer science problems from a risk standpoint.
And that's, you know, that's super important because
I'm not a farmer. So it's like, okay, that's awesome.
It's super important because when we look at vulnerabilities on a scale like Bug Crowd deals with, like many, many customers who run many, many different types of businesses, they all want security, but security can mean very different things to different businesses. And having that diverse pool, having people who think a little bit differently, whether that's because it's of your, like where you're from, your like educational background, we were going to touch on neurodiversity, but like how your brain functions on the inside, all of that comes together to create the hacking community. And that's what businesses need. You can't just have one person who like is testing your website, because these are diverse people who are going to like attackers that are going to come after your stuff.
Exactly. Yeah. You're trying to outsmart a diverse, like ultimately a malicious community that has, you know, just as much, if not more, diversity available to it. So logically you need to be able to basically beat that at its own game and have, you know, just as much diversity available for defense. Like that's really, you know, one of the founding kind of sets of thesis that I've worked on. It's pretty much, you know, balancing the playing field in a sense of what's available, the entire spectrum of different, you know, skill sets, mindsets, like different things that get brought in on the attacker side. And then also, frankly, you know, thinking in the same way of the builders that are within an organization, like the people that write code. You know, my kind of theory on vulnerabilities just in general, I get asked the question a lot, do you think that AI is going to replace human intelligence when it comes to vulnerability discovery and offense? And my answer to that typically is that, you know, by the time that happens, we'll be more worried about Skynet than we will about you know, vulns and code, or we'll be thinking about vulns and code in a different way because we'll be using them to defeat Skynet at that point in time. But when you think about, you know, humans like writing software and deploying systems, like we're creative, we're powerful. I think people are pretty awesome personally, but we're also like not perfect. So that's really what goes into creation of your attack surface in the first place. It's that same diversity that actually goes into creating the vulnerabilities that you discover, you know, to begin with. It's really, it becomes a matter of just balancing out the forces that you're applying to the problem in order to keep.
And look at all the things that we're touching right now. I mean, we're not just going inside the mind of a hacker. We're going inside society and how it works. And there is a part in the report that Bob Crowe did that where you say that hacking is not just a career, it's a movement. And when I think about movement, I think about all the things that you and Kathy just said right now, which is coming together, change the cultural approach on the way you see things, business starting to understand that it's not about boxing themselves to hide their bugs, but actually creating an environment that is a glass box that it can help everybody to grow. And this coming together of the community, let's talk about this, Casey, about how hackers do work in team and how that is so much better. And I think you can connect that with the diversity issue as well.
Yeah, no, for sure. So, you know, collaboration is a pretty consistent desire that we see, you know, contributors on Bug Crowd have, and just in general in the hacker community. I think that idea, you know, predates, like it goes back to the 90s, and even before that, I would say, with you know, your kind of OG hacking crews. And it really comes down to like, oh yeah, I'm a radio person, like the other person is a, you know, data person, and we've got a software problem to solve in the middle of all this as well. Like, we can't all know all of it, so let's, you know, do like the Voltron assemble thing and create you know, this like mega robot where, you know, the whole is greater than the sum of the parts. I think people that are thoughtful about approaching, you know, computer science problems, I mean, that's how you build a team to build a thing in the first place, right? So logically, it also applies to trying to work out how to reverse engineer and do offensive work. And we see, you know, a huge percentage of the community want to do that. We're seeing a growing number of organizations become comfortable with that. The counterpoint to it, I think, is still this state where, you know, companies are getting over this idea that, admitting a vulnerability in your system is not actually an issue of weakness or frailty as an organization. It's just a business problem. Like, you're going to have them. So, you know, the quicker you can get to the point where you're just operating on the fact that that's a certainty, and then working out how to identify them, fix them, and learn from them, the better. But, you know, more of the organizations that we work with are supporting features that we've built on the platform that actually enable collaboration. I think there's a stat that we've got where, you know, it's 30-odd% of people that hack on the platform, deliberately seek out to work in teams because they know their own limitations. It's like, here's a bunch of stuff that I'm really good at. It's not everything. So I need to find ways to fill those gaps in order to solve the problems that are in front of me. The hacker community to me has always been about like curiosity, but also about the impartation of knowledge and the sharing of knowledge. The good parts of it, there's, you know, the elitist stuff and the gatekeeping that we kind of touched on earlier on. Putting that aside, I think the core of it really is this idea of like, we can all get smarter and the internet and computer science and all of these systems that have been built, it's like going outside and exploring, you know, the forest or the outback or the bush here in Australia. So the more people I can do that with who understand parts of it that I might not, the more successful I'll be, the more enjoyable that'll be, you know, the better outcome it'll be for all of us.
Yeah, and I want to touch on this point about the teams a little further, and maybe Katie has some thoughts on this, because if we look at, Marco mentioned society, and we have businesses, and we've kind of been living in a certain way for a really long time. And then last year we got a nice big shake, right? You don't have to go to an office. You don't have to sit next to a bunch of people. Maybe you don't want to sit next to, but that's the world of the hacker community already, right? You can be wherever you want. You can participate in a team if you want. You can run on your own if you'd like to. But the teams can kind of self-form based on what they feel comfortable with. And that may include folks that don't like bright lights inside an office, or don't like loud noises, or don't like to participate in big meetings and don't want to speak out in company calls, whatever the things are that all of us have our own little unique things. So neurodiversity, we can really draw upon the uniqueness of folks that may not fit into the norm of what businesses were, even up until last year. So Katie, how do you see, and I know you and Casey have presented on this topic, how do you see the role of neurodiversity and all the benefits of all the ways folks work and think as part of this?
So I myself am autistic and I've got dyslexia. So my brain is wired. If you don't really know about what that means, autism is it's called like a learning disorder. It really much affects your entire life, not just your learning. And what it means is that you can have trouble communicating with other people. And people who are autistic have stuff like what's called a special interest. Now, people have interests. Autistics have a single track mind for their special interest. Like, they eat, sleep, live it. They would do that the entire time and they would be in the happiest place on earth. And for some people, this is like general subjects like math. Some people are, the standard one is like trains or patterns in things, right? But a lot of people who are autistic have a special interest in computers. And that's because the way a computer works is how autistic people wish humans worked. Computers do what they're told in a very predictable way, and humans don't tend to do that. So autistic people are naturally drawn towards computers. And what's really difficult if you're autistic is talking to somebody who isn't autistic. Because people who are autistic have a very specific way they view the world, and it can be really difficult to get somebody else, not necessarily to see it through your eyes, but to bring them along on the same journey. So that's the kind of background, like why, but then you can get, why are people who are neurodivergent looking at things like hacking? And why can people like me who are autistic feel so comfortable with participating in teams? And it's because people who, like me, love hacking. They love computers. It is the fire that ignites them. It is that burning passion. They are so interested in it. And what I see in terms of like looking at a traditional job, many autistic people can do a traditional job. But what you have to do is mask your autistic traits, because most people can't deal with having somebody who is autistic. So you learn to pretend to be like not like just a regular person. And what you don't have to do in hacking is do that. That is so tiring, to pretend to be someone you're not. And even I think people who do have normal brain setups struggle with that a little bit. But then when it comes to like talking about hacking and doing something you really enjoy, it clicks. Everything clicks into place, because you can talk about the thing you love. You can share all of the knowledge you have. You can info dump on people and nobody minds. And you just get drawn to this community. And it'd be really great if there were more traditional jobs that could support that. But there's very few. So by
reward for being different in that sense, Katie, it's like the idea of, it's not just being able to have that outlet. It's the fact that that outlet or that expression of neurodiversity is almost the essence of the thing that creates an outcome. It's like, okay, yeah. I think differently. I can apply myself to problem solving in a different way to the person that built this thing potentially. And that's going to connect and create an output that everyone's happy about and people can go off and do stuff with. I get paid, you know, I get a pat on the back for the contribution, you know, in addition to the payment. Like that to me, one of the things that I love about this whole space is that, you know, in other areas where it can be an impediment or a disability or a disorder, it actually kind of amounts to a superpower. The opposite is really kind of the aim of the game.
And this is going to go very much into social science, but there is an idea in disability, of the social model of disability, that is that people are disabled, not necessarily because they have inherently disabled qualities, but because society isn't built for them. Like somebody in a wheelchair can function just fine if there are ramps. And that's quite an obvious one, but actually it's the same people who are neurodivergent as well, where a lot of things that are considered disabilities really just need workarounds, and then you can kind of tap into that potential.
Definitely. This is the part, like there's a phenomena in like government employment of people that do offensive security, where like there's literally an entire consulting sector that exists mostly because people would have a difficulty actually obtaining a government clearance. It's like, you know, they're neurodivergent, they've got, you know, history, they've got, you know, different aspects of their behavior, their personality that don't quite fit with going through and getting the clearances and doing all those sorts of things. But you know, what governments around the world have figured out is that if they basically place that bar in between their problem and the talent that they can actually have come in and solve that problem, then the problem's not going to get solved. You end up with this like wacky kind of consulting layer across, you know, large chunks of government, literally just to solve that particular problem. And it's one of the things that we saw with Bug Crowd. It's like, okay, you know, you have a high prevalence of Asperger's. Like I was diagnosed with ADHD a couple of years back, which all of a sudden made a whole bunch of things make sense in terms of like, you know, hyper awareness, hyper focus on problems and being drawn to those things, but also this idea of flow and being able to order, you know, basically my attention around things and then pretty much like run through whatever walls in front of me if I can get that done. All of these different traits are really common in the hacker community, but they don't necessarily you know, fit in with you know, I don't want to kind of diminish it and call it the normies, because that, yeah, they're doing awesome stuff too, right? But there is a you know, potential for friction there that is pretty well established and well known. So the idea of being able to say, okay, you can get the benefit of that on the terms of the people that are contributing, you know, work with that, they get to go away or to engage with that, to form teams, all of the stuff that we just talked about, you know, according to what's going to make them most successful. And what we've done is kind of abstracted you know, the perceived and the real risk of figuring out how to do all of that stuff from both parties, and just made them both successful in the process. I think that's you know, to me, that's the future of work in a lot of different areas. That's actually going to be a thing that becomes a very common, you know, you fast forward 10 years, it'll be a pretty commonplace thing.
Casey, I was just thinking that what you just said is it's kind of like being at the forefront of a more open environment, welcoming 100%. To everyone. And Kathy, when you said about if there were ramps, people in a wheelchair wouldn't be disabled, it's society that make people with disability disabled. So it's what is normal, what is non-normal. It's a very big philosophical question anyway.
Ultimately, organizations don't exist to hire people. Like that's the where I think this whole thing gets tripped up. It's like, oh, well, I need to hire a team to do a thing. It's like, no, you need answers to the questions that you're trying to get answers to in order to build your business. Like the fact that you're getting them from people is almost incidental to that. So, yeah, the more ways you can connect with the most effective sources of those answers, I think the better. And if anything, you know, we mentioned COVID just before, like 2020 has been a ginormous kick in the ass for that whole idea, because all of a sudden you've got people that were, you know, previously very uncomfortable with that idea that have been sort of forced over the hump. And now we're in a position where, you know, we're doing this over Zoom, we're in all different parts of the world. Like we're all techies, so we would have done that anyway, but kind of everyone's doing this now, and that wasn't true 12 months ago. So there's all of a sudden this, I think, greater acceptance of the fact that like skills lie everywhere. Answers to questions that you have, you know, aren't just within the four walls of your company. They exist in you know, places that you haven't looked yet. They exist from people that you wouldn't necessarily always choose to work with straight away. Yeah, if your objective is to get a thing done, then really it becomes about making sure you get that question answered.
I think that's something that gets missed as well. People think diversity is good because diversity is a good thing to do. Like morally, it's a good thing to do. There's quite a nice capitalistic argument there that diversity is good for business. Like getting more diverse people, like let's take security, for example. You get people from different countries with different backgrounds, with different ways of thinking. You're going to get different vulnerabilities. You get the same person in, you're going to see the same thing. Diversity isn't just good because it's morally a good thing to do. It's good because it can, like, it's good for business. You can make money if you exploit the actual people you have access to and work with them rather than feeling like they're going to be a burden on you.
Exploit is such a fun word because I think the connotation that goes with it is almost always negative, but ultimately it means to gain.
It's positive. It's positive insecurity. We want to exploit stuff. That's where we find the good bugs.
Positive from a business standpoint too. It's to, you know, it's to undertake an activity and to gain from it. And if like there's multiple parties that are doing that at the same time in a way that's mutually beneficial, then everyone kind of wins from that. So you know, creating a condition where everyone can exploit what's available for mutual gain and to be able to go forward from that. Like that's the utopian state. And I don't know, like I feel like there's still a ton of work. We've talked about, you know, some of the barriers and the perceptions that we have to overcome still with hackers. There's legal risks. There's all sorts of things that are still, you know, in progress, I think. But it's heading in the right direction. And that's the thing, you know, very, very proud of like the work that Katie's done around educating all these people and like stepping up into that role. Very proud of the work that Bug Crowd's done in creating that category and taking the idea forward. And I think there's, you know, it's all trending in the right direction, which is pretty cool.
And Bug Crowd University for training and education as well. And
go watch my talks. Go watch my talks.
And the talk.
Go watch Katie's talks.
So I'm going to change the word exploit to farm, because we touched on farming earlier. So I'm going to say we need to do a better job at farming the resources that we have available to us, right? And I think we've, as we wrap here, I think there are too many preconceived notions, too many barriers, too many filters, too many people wearing blinders, and just an antique way of doing business that kind of lets a lot of our farming resources go to waste. And And if we can clear a lot of that stuff away, open our minds, look to this community, I think, and it takes us full circle what Katie just said there in the last minute, where it's a benefit to the business. Our very first conversation was about the business and the fact that folks are all over the world from different walks of life, different experiences, different education, different training, focused on different things with different mindsets is a huge value to a business. And it's an untapped set of resources that we need to farm, in my opinion.
Yeah, wholeheartedly.
I think it really came all together around with the four different conversations that we had. I mean, it all makes sense, at least for me. Now, our job is to convince everyone else or show everyone else that this makes sense. And again, as Casey, you said, and Kathy, this applies to the entire society, to many other businesses, and embracing diversity and giving opportunity to people, because that's another thing we spoke about. With all this COVID thing, being able to work part-time, just start in this career, just to get better in this career, learn from one another, that's all good for everyone. So thank you again.
And on our Hacker Tractors. Am I going too far with that?
I feel like, Sean, you really got trapped into this farming thing. You're connecting the bugs with the farming. I really enjoy this conversation very, very much. Sean, this is it.
I guess the final moment. So a lot of things we touched on here were driven by a report that Bug Crowd puts together, Inside the Mind of a Hacker. We covered it in four chapters. I would encourage everybody to listen, from business on through to how the community works together and does their work, and all the way to this point of why. Right. So listen to all the episodes, grab a copy of the report, run through that, and join the community, right, on one nice side step. Or the other, or both.
Yeah. And just to add to that, I appreciate it, Sean. So it's itmoa.com. So Inside the Mind of a Hacker, the acronym, bugcrowd.com is where you can grab that report from. And yeah, like, you know, I encourage everyone to take a look at it, because there is this, you know, demystifying the role of the hacker, the personality, you know, who are the people behind the you know, green screen, you know, underneath the hoodie, all that sort of stuff. Just making it more real and approachable for folk to understand that, like, these are just folks that are the same as the people that they've got in their team. They've got a special set of skills that they need. And really, you know, our job is to connect as much of the solution to the problems that exist as we can. So whatever we can do to reduce uncertainty or you know, unproductive mystery, there's obviously, you know, the kind of hacker mystique is fun, and we tweak that, and hackers love it, and I think a lot of organizations love that part too. But the degree to which it can be, you know, scary and unproductive, that's really what we're trying to basically eliminate as much as we can. So yeah, do highly encourage people to at least go take a look at the website and get in touch.
Yep, absolutely. Demystify.
Yeah, and there'll be resources and links to the documents, the reports, and how people can get involved exactly underneath probably this video and near this podcast. However you're consuming this, there is something for you. So again, thank you very much. A pleasure seeing you again and meeting you, Katie, for the first time. And I hope to see you in person next time, soon. Very soon.
Yes. Very soon, I hope, yeah.
We do. We all do.
Thanks, guys.
If you enjoyed this podcast, share ITSP Magazine with your friends, family, and colleagues. Thank you for listening.